Hey everyone, this is Tony Holbein from Growblogs. You are listening to the Revenue Formula with Mikkel and Tony. In today's episode, we are talking about the hidden practicalities in high-velocity sales with no other than Frank Nardi, CRO at Sin7. Enjoy.
Oh man, that almost felt like the intro. And by the way, I almost wanted to ask you. So, I mean, we're obviously just all of a sudden going to transition into the effective episode, by the way, Frank, just so you know.
Yeah.
But I kind of been looking at this and the listeners, they won't be able to see it, but you have a photo in the background and it looks like an astronaut on the bike. Am I seeing that right?
So there's a theme. What you guys don't know about me is I'm very theme oriented. So I have three astronauts.
So also, you know, just for everyone to be reminded, those pictures are pre-AI gen, you know, gen AI, right? Those are,
this is an actual astronaut.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is an artist in New York, James Blank or something like that, that does these photos. And he dresses somebody up in an astronaut outfit and goes to New York and takes these real photos. So.
And so he's like, Frank, who's this Frank guy? He's buying all my photos.
Actually, the question is, Frank, when will you be one of those, you know, dressed up in the astronaut costumes in New York City and taking a picture of?
Man, you know, it can happen. It can really happen. And it's not that far away. It's an actual reality. That the hard part, the thing that no one talks about is actually packing the astronaut suit and getting it to New York, right? Yeah. Like, you got this big helmet. You're going to wear that on the plane. You know what I mean? You're going to put it in, you know, you're going to put it in cargo. It's going to scratch up. Like, no one has, like, people have like dog cart thing they travel with. They have all, no one has an astronaut helmet bag ready in hand.
But you're also being silly about it. Why not just wear it? I mean, what are they going to say? You're not allowed to wear an astronaut.
Excuse me, sir. Can you lift your visor? We need to check your ID.
I mean, Mikkel, you haven't been to the U.S. neither. Have you been on an airplane? So maybe you don't know those rules.
I have been to the U.S., but let's talk about that in another intro, because we have a guest with us today.
That's true.
Frank, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Welcome, Frank.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. This is exciting stuff.
So you are currently CRO. We kind of, maybe you got that clue already from listening to the introduction, CRO at Sin7. Very quickly, just for the listener, what does Sin7 do? What can you tell us a little bit about the company, just so the listeners know the background?
Yep. So Sin7, we are connected inventory performance. So we are an inventory solution for the modern day product seller. So we help them not just manage their inventory as they scale, but we help them sell in more channels. We help them grow with efficiency as they, you know, as they reach these milestones as a business, right? And so we're in this battle, this big battle against inventory inefficiency. And it's a real issue. Like, there's a $163 billion year problem. And it's one of the top five reasons a small product seller will go out of business and never reach its full potential.
Yeah.
So we help them not only avoid these scaling issues, but we help them thrive and achieve their best sales through Sin7.
The key word here also is, you know, small businesses, right? Kind of, this is an SMB setup, right? Kind of the motion is SMB, high volume, lots of basic kind of high velocity sales, right? Is that how we can imagine that?
Yep, that's right. So we have two different customer profiles. We have these first time buyers that are reaching that first point of scale. They could be doing like $1 million worth of revenue and they're using spreadsheets and it's not working for them, or they unfortunately make this big mistake where they lose track of some inventory as they sell in multiple channels. So we have them come into, and those deals can be, you know, anywhere with 4K ACV, right?
Yeah.
You know, $4,000. Yeah. And then we have what we call the second time or multi-time plus time buyer that's coming from a competitor or coming from, you know, a big ERP, and they're just not seeing the results that they want there. And so they're coming over to us and they get more efficiency out of that. And those deals can range into the, you know, maybe 12K a year. So, and we're closing hundreds of those a month, and we're doing that in a 30-day sales cycle. So it's a very fast transactional inbound motion.
And so maybe just to kind of, for folks to get a grasp here, how many deals is that per seller per month, like ballpark?
In the teens, for sure, right?
Yeah.
Like, so we have different ranges and such, but it's certainly in the teens. We have reps that have closed up to 20 plus, 25 plus.
Crazy. Yeah. So now I think this kind of creates this nice, okay, you know, this is the setup that Frank is running, which I think is going to set up the rest of the conversation actually in a pretty nice way. So thank you for that background. And, you know, jumping right in there, we already talked about astronauts. Mm. Like that was pretty key.
So Formula One next.
So thanks, Mikkel. So the next thing is actually, you know, because I heard a rumor that you might have listened to a show, you know, on Spotify, on Apple, and they talked about the Formula One analogy on tweaking and tuning your revenue engine, basically. Kind of, and I think the specific piece was the pit stop, right? The pit stop going from 60 seconds or 1 minute in the 50s or 60s, I'm not sure when they started, down to what it is now, but two seconds is like a bad, it's like a bad result or something like this. And they didn't get there. Sorry, go ahead.
No, it was really good. I love that episode. So the setup of all this, I'm prepping for our revenue, leadership offsite, right? And so I'm doing the whole revenue org presentation. It's a big day. It's one of those days where it's all day sessions, all the Sin7 execs are there, and we're planning for that next phase of growth for Sin7. So we always talk about revenue engine of people, process, and systems and how it's all alignment. So you have this engine theme, right? So the night before I'm trying to go through the prezo, I don't have the theme nailed. I want to fully click on the message, but it's not hitting. So I go, I start working. It's like late. It's like midnight. I'm going working out and I'm just listening to my pods, you know, rotation, and you guys come up and it was the Pablo Doming, what unicorns know from Insight Partners. So he talks about this efficiency and effectiveness and how Formula One is the pinnacle and how it's about, and I'm like, boom, that's it. Right. But it's late. So I'm like, how do I hit this home? So I drove, you know, obviously change up the presentation, but on the way into work, I'm walking and I'm like, man, I wonder if CVS, because I'm walking to work and I see a CVS. I'm like, I wonder if they have Matchbox cars. So I go into CVS and lo and behold, they have 10 Matchbox cars and we had 10 liters. So I'm like, you know, this is perfect. Grab all them. And I start my presentation by handing out a bunch of Matchbox cars, all these little race cars to everybody. And I'm like, efficiency, effectiveness, revenue engine, future of Sin7, you know, how do we think about effective and relentless execution at scale? So it just hit home.
So if folks ever wonder what do executive leaders do at offsites? Well, Matchbox. they play with cars.
Matchbox.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Oh, it's a thing now. Yeah. People are asking me, like, what are you bringing to the next one? I'm like, man, it depends on what Tony and Mikhail come up with on their podcast next time.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We'll do our best.
So walk us a little bit more through, if you can, this was then the presentation, and hey, we need to think about fine-tuning this whole thing. And I'm almost on a, I don't know, like almost a cultural level. Did people start thinking differently suddenly about the sales engine and what needs to be done in order to get it where you guys wanted to get it?
You know, I think it's always, these things are always a process, not an event, right? And so I've always talked about ruthless priorities. And the one of the things that we've tried to get to is like, we need to do less to achieve more. Like, it's not what we want to go do and be and all these big innovative things. That's great, but it's also what we need to shed to focus on the right things so that we're continually being effective. I learned at a prior role, and it's something that stuck with me, is like, efficiency only gets you so far. Like, we can't cut our way to growth. You just can't keep taking things either out of the sales process or just making things more efficient. Because if you go too far that way, then you become super stale, right?
Yeah.
Every customer gets the same email. Every customer gets the same response by a sales rep. You have to have some personalization in there to be effective. And so that's the first thing there. So it was an idea of like continued focus on ruthless priorities to go achieve our goals. And then the other thing I think it helps is we continually focus on and have been focusing on breaking the traditional silos. Like, if you think about our process, we have a free trial motion into our inbound and we have a demo request. If you look at just a free trial, right, it really is tough. It is somewhat of a sales-led model, but it is really tough for us to just say marketing hands off leads to sales hands off deals to onboarding hands off deals to CS, right? Because our product is one of those products where the interactions between sales, marketing, and onboarding within those products, it's actually folks are getting in, they're trying the trial, and they're actually starting to onboard. right? Mm-hmm. Usage of a trial is setting up products and watching those products move through. That's kind of an onboarding motion, right? So there is a overlap of marketing, products, communication, touch points, sales. Where do the sales interject? Where they do, where they don't, where they let the product sell the product, right? All that stuff has to be intertwined. And then we work on improving all the gaps in between, because that's where all the inefficiencies can lie. That's where the challenges can be.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about this, right? Because I think for many people out there, and I think this is actually by now a general, it's a known fact, I feel. Everyone wants to be more efficient. Everyone talks about it all the time. But everyone at the end of the day, when it comes down to it, to actually do something about it, they kind of struggle. They struggle with having good ideas, what could be done, and then they do like a brainstorming session, and then they have 1,000 ideas. And then kind of figuring out what to prioritize and how to go about it. How did you solve this riddle? How did you, you know, solve, you know, seeing exactly where the next big pressure point is that needs your attention?
So we talk a lot about visibility and traceability all the time, right? If we can't see it, we can't impact it. So we have our entire process mapped out. I love the winning by design model. Like I said, I'm a student at heart, and I've been using that bow tie for a long time, right? And so we look at all those moments that matter across the inbound funnel, and you can't do that unless you have a connected data and systems layer, right? So it's very important for us to make sure that everything is connected across. And then on top of that, we're starting to add now a lot more on the buyer journey experience layer. So if you think about it, we have these, you know, big hero metrics that each department has, right? Like marketing has them, sales has them. And then we have those secondary metrics like conversions on, you know, how many ops are you creating, how many leads, all the standard stuff, right? But then we take it a step further, and then we look at the buyer journey and all the interactions, touch points, email 4, call 7, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then we layer on an experience layer there. So we're watching those metrics, and then we begin to look at them as leading rather than lagging. So we're looking at them in real time. And then we're able to understand if something's not working, right? And then begin to sort of A/B and test out of it. And for the most part, how you find those, you know, biggest impacts, you know, if you think about all the outflows that can happen, someone signs up for a demo request, but they don't show, or someone signs up for a demo request, but they show, but then they're not as active as maybe someone else, like all these different flows, we map them. And then we just A/B test our way through it. I think the thing is, we find is in our process, and I love this quote, I heard it the other day, there are no silver bullets, there's only like 1,000 golden BBs. And that's kind of how we think about it, which actually, guys, maybe that's my next leadership offsite. I'll just spray paint a bunch of BBs and bring those in, like handful of BBs, and hand them out. And everyone's like, what are you doing?
I love that. I really do love that, actually. So the kind of thinking through this, I'm just picturing this. You are super focused on this product-led sales motion, which probably technically that's what the cool kids call it these days. And it's only that, right? You don't have outbound. You don't have any of the other stuff. You basically only have that one revenue stream that you're focusing on.
We have a partner motion, right? So that comes in. Our partners are a big part of what we do. And they're great because they create an awesome ecosystem for our buyers, right? So if you think about a first-time founder, an entrepreneur, like our customers are awesome because they have this entrepreneurial spirit. They want to go disrupt something, right? They want to create a new product that's going to break the cycle of what's already out there and want to grow. So our partners come in and they help them with their tech stack. They help them with their either implementation, or they help them, like, you know, put all these pieces together. And we're a part of that journey. So we do have that motion. Outbounding for us is super interesting because a lot of times our customers don't have a lot of that data yet, right? Yeah. Like if we're going to go and create an ABM motion, I've had people try and pitch me. We've tried a couple times. It's just never been a bread and butter for us because, like, there's you know, if it's 4 guys in Texas who are creating a barbecue sauce and they just hit $1 million of revenue, they're not going to be well known by the big data systems, right? So it's like, how do you target them and how do you find them? So for us, it's very much a demand gen, tell our stories through our website, tell our stories through social, tell our stories through How they find us when they say, hey, man, I'm hitting this barrier. I need to go find a solution for this problem. Here we are.
And that's almost kind of my point, right? Because you have the, you have no other choice than to ultra focus on this thing. You know what I mean? It's, this is the one way you generate cash, and sure, there's some other areas as well. I'm not going to ask into distribution of those, but that kind of gives you this, you know, it's fortunate, it's unfortunate, but it gives you this focus where you can go to this level of, and you kind of jumped over this, hey, you know, email 4, meeting 6, and so forth. Other people that are listening is like, wow, what is he talking about? You know, I thought he's running sales reps. Sounds like it's robots. But that kind of focus enables you to be so detailed and so focused, and then start doing this A-B testing. Start being, you know, as Dave Boyce would put it, playing scientist here a little bit, right? Yeah. And being like very kind of specific on what do you tweak and how, and what will be the expected result.
Yeah, so two things there. I think it is, necessity is the mother of invention, right? If we want to meet our customers where they are and where they are in their journey, we have to do it this way, right?
Yeah.
They're ultra busy. There's not a lot of people that work at these companies, right? They're just starting out. So we have to find them and meet them where they are. But I think to your point about the fun part of it is we do have, you know, some really cool, I think there's certainly a lot of science to it, but there's a lot of fun in that we can move so fast in that when we make changes, we can see and have a quick impact, right? So if we're seeing a trend we love, 5th of the month of April, we can make a change that affects April, right? Mm-hmm. If we see something that we don't like, we can make a change that can kind of adjust and improve April, right? And so that's how we think about it. We think about like, what can we do and what can we impact so that we continually do the best to maximize our output and performance? And the cool part about it for me is I always have to wake up and think about, and our team wakes up and think about a balance, right? There's never like people are bigger than process and systems. It's like I'm balancing these three legs of the stool. And it's always about like putting our best people in the right positions to win, continually streamlining those process to cut out anything that our customers don't value or just helps our team execute. And then our systems need to be interconnected. They need to automate steps, and they need to also aggregate data, right? Mm-hmm. So a good example is like a lot of folks use conversation intelligence. We use it all the time. Some of our reps have 5 to 7 demos a day, right? Mm-hmm. So like, you know, they could have a busy day, 7 demos, right? I can't listen to hundreds of calls. Our teams can't listen to hundreds of calls, but those themes in those calls, we can spot trends over time and aggregate that data. And now with a lot of the tools and tech out there with AI and stuff, we want to start to continue to lean into that so that we can start having those systems tell us, you know, help us see around corners, help us tell us what we don't know about the themes and things that are popping up and how fast we can respond to those as the behaviors change or the market changes.
Yeah.
I think what's super interesting just listening to you is I also wonder how do you manage growing and closing that pipeline, because it's so different. Usually when you have like a lower ACV doing any kind of sales, it's just a non-starter because of the unit economics. But you have high velocity, and I think that can also bring quite a few challenges. You know, do you run a forecasting session where we sit and, you know, prioritize deals, and can we get the CEO's involvement to help close it? Just doesn't make sense anymore. So I'm just wondering how do you manage that side of the business as well when you have such short sales cycles, and you know the leading indicator as well, next week that's going to happen.
Yeah. So it's true. So I've talked a lot about those, that first time buyer, right? But we also have the second time buyer. We have a little bit of the larger kind of scratching that mid market, a little bit of mid market deals. We still do a lot of the fundamentals in sales, right? There's pipeline coverage. We do have our forecast calls. We have a cycle every month. Right. And so if you think about it, we have this interesting, consistent rhythm that we really love to tap into. So for pipeline coverage, we want 3X just like everyone wants 3X, right? Like, you know, like that's kind of how we think about it. But it's a cycle, right? So if you think month end closes just like a quarter close for a lot of maybe enterprise deal, like there's this mad rush to get all the deals in, right? So everybody closes up And then a week or two, we're building that pipeline back. So by the middle of the month, I'm looking for all the reps to have that 3X, right? And then they kind of, like a bank account, they withdraw by the end of the month and then they're building it back up and then they withdraw by the end. So there's this like rhythm that we continue to watch. And then on the system side, we're constantly looking for by rep, by region, by lead level, by lead source. Our marketing team does a great job of iterating lead sources and paid media and constantly adjusting. So if we see a drop or a gap, we're adjusting that. Our sales enablement comes in and kind of like, hey, we're seeing an increase here. Customers' buying behavior is improving. One of our modules, or there's a need for us to lean into something that we weren't needing before, spot trends. And so it's this interesting rhythm we can take action on. And if we can execute quickly, which that's some of the most exciting things that I've seen us do, is we can move the needle in that month or in that quarter.
Yeah, I think that's pretty crazy. And it's also pretty cool. And talking about the short-termism of it, which is exciting because of the immediate impact you have, you know, input outputs, you know, correlate extremely nicely. You kind of almost get this dopamine hit, you know, when you see something working out, right? I can almost see it in your in your face and kind of hear it on your voice. But at the same time, the board and the exec leadership team is still going to ask you, so Frank, what about in 4.5 months from now? Are you going to hit that target? Or by the end of the year, how is that working out? And that then suddenly becomes a little bit harder to actually talk about because of the short-term stuff that you're running, right? So how do you, because I imagine as a CEO, you will be asked that question, right? And you need to sit there and have like a strong answer to that. So how do you manage that?
I think everyone kind of deals this, right? Like if you're in the big enterprise world, and I talked to some friends and some folks out there that are in that space, you know, they're still trying to do that with a big deal. Hopefully it lands in Q4, maybe it pushes to Q1, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it's like one deal misses, it could really mess up. We're in the space of looking at, and how we project is about matching trends and matching traction and how we look to adjust. So a good example is like, as marketing is doing what marketing is doing and continually refining lead sources and spend and all the little adjustments that they're doing there and how we go up funnel, and they're continuing to do some great stuff with our content and our messaging frameworks. They're looking to increase their lead volume. We're looking to increase conversion, right? And then on conversion, we're also looking to say like product is also releasing some new great stuff. So we're also looking to capitalize and share with the market all that great stuff that's happening. And so there really is this operational rev build that we look, and we think about it as like, yes, we have a budget, and that budget, annual budget, is going to be like, here's our North Star. This is what we're going to go get for 2024. And that's there. But, you know, like driving to Canada, right? You know what that North Star is, but you're going to take a whole bunch of left and right turns, and there could be some traffic, or there could be this freeway that no one's on. Let's speed up and go. Like there's all these kind of little nuances that we're going to make along the way. So I think for us, it is, we do see, you know, months out because we're tracking these trends months back. But it's always the same challenge of, you know, how do you project a forecast, you know, 12 months away as you know, the market, you know, what is the market going to be then and how it's going to adjust?
Yeah.
I think another dimension of this is also, I imagine you will get hit a lot quicker by a gap in your funnel because of how high velocity everything is. And I think especially these last couple of years, it's been, a different market, to put it in a nice way, right? So I'm just wondering, like, maybe share an experience there. Have you seen any kind of gap appear, and what did you do to kind of fix it, just given how different the business operates?
You touched on it. So it's been a few months back now, but we, you know, I think a lot of SaaS felt this. We started to see a lot of latent versus active buyers. Right. So if you think about COVID, a lot of product sellers had to move online, right? And so move to new channels. And we were there for them to help them through that process. And So a lot of folks were super active, right? And so now in SaaS, like there's just more latent buyers out there. Buyer behavior shifting, you know, in every stage, SMB, mid-market, enterprise. So we have a more cautious buyer. Deal cycle are extending. So for us, when we think about deal cycles extending, let's say it extends 10 days, right? It doesn't mean that nothing's happening in those 10 days, right? It doesn't mean it's just 10 days of silence, right? There's three more demos that have to happen. There's five more calls. And so we have to look at that, not only like, okay, what's the buyer behavior to solve the gap, but also how does this impact the capacity of the team? Because if we have reps taking on three more demos and five more calls on a deal they would have normally closed 10 days ago, like that, right? So we're looking at that and trying to get ahead and using that data to be able to then go say, okay, what do we need? If the buyers need more convincing, or what's their hesitation, how quickly can we mobilize, change our process? So like one of the things we did, which was, you know, we used to have an SDR AE process, right? That's what, you know, we grew through. We changed that so that our AEs would move just further up into the conversation to be able to talk to the buyer, to meet them where they are, right? We had to change our enablement there. Our product team did some great in-app actions, right? So customers, if they're in the free trial, they're like, okay, this makes sense. Okay, yeah, I can talk to somebody now. Like, how do we adjust and shift to improve the buyer experience for that more cautious, you know, latent buyer? We always want to grow Sin7. We always want to, you know, but we also want to create a better experience for the buyers at the same time, right? And so if we're approaching a latent buyer and an active buyer the same way, their experience is not going to be as great, right? And so we want to look at that differently.
So just want to double down on something you said there, because I'm not sure everyone caught it fully. So you said our sales cycles are pushing out. That will have an impact on our reps capacity because you're now running more deals at the same time, basically, right? And that will be an issue because, hey, there's only so much time left in the day. And now we ask them to do more. Number one, I think very few people think about the world like that, like period. So massive kudos there. And number two, it also speaks to me, like if in another company, sales cycles are pushing out a couple of days. Number one, people might not actually realize that it happens. So like that's number one. Number two, if they do realize it happening, they won't realize that there's a second order impact they need to take care of. And number three, because maybe the engine isn't as finely tuned as yours in this case, they might not even have to. And they can because there's so much slack still in the engine, they can compensate by not doing anything because then, yes, the reps will be a bit more busy. In your case, because there's more fine-tuning going on, is way more stringent, so to speak. And I think you and I discussed this once, like a couple of months back. There's so many points of failure, actually, right? Because the system is so tight and, you know, every little thing that goes wrong could actually topple some of the other things further downstream. And how do you sleep at night, actually? Kind of how do you do that, right? When there's so multiple points of failure. And conversely, kind of how do you manage this?
Do you remember in Las Vegas in the Formula One when they had to stop the whole race because there was like a pothole bump in the road? Yeah. A pothole in the road. I think so here's what I'll say. We have an exceptional team, our marketing team, our ops team, our product team, our partnership team, onboarding. Like when we think about like how we do this, it is certainly like everyone's focused in the same direction. And when I think about velocity for us, it's when we look at building this at scale, we know that we can't, you know, if, you know, marketing starts to land a whole bunch more leads, I just can't go and throw headcount at that problem, right? If I get 300 more leads, I can't go three more heads, right? So when we know that, I think a lot of companies are going to start adopting some aspects of this model, right? Because it's not that growth at all cost mindset anymore. It's that, you know, PEG or profitable efficient growth. Like we want to be super efficient moving forward. So it really does take a team, and it does take a bunch of folks looking at this from different angles. A good example is like, I don't just wake up and think about this, but our ops leaders come in and they go, hey, we're seeing a trend. You should think about this. Right. And I say, okay, great. Marketing's like, hey, we're seeing a lead source that used to be great for us at high conversion start to shift. We're going to start to divert from that, or we're going to start to go talk to them and figure out what's happening. Like this is certainly like not a only me thing. This is a whole bunch of folks, including our finance team that does a great job. They're building the red builds. Then they're looking at it and they're saying, okay, how are we trending? How is our headcount, you know, sales headcount to performance, all that kind of stuff. And they're providing me that data too. So yeah, I guess I would just leave it at that. Like, I think it's certainly a team effort.
This conversation is super interesting because I think it was yesterday I was sitting on the train home and I read one of David Spitz's posts. So he looks at a lot of publicly traded SaaS companies and, you know, analyzes them basically. And he said, so for the majority of companies, they basically overpay for new AR. And just one case was, I believe it was Salesforce paying $2.50 for $1. And it's just, that's not going to be sustainable in the long run. And I was also just thinking, wow, it's going to be pretty difficult for them to shift that whole engine around to be efficient all of a sudden. So basically this whole shift to efficient growth, and I heard you talking about working closely with finance, and that's kind of part of it in my head as well. There's just a need for you to be more efficient and maybe even almost profitable with how you're acquiring customers. And I'm just curious to hear, what shift has that led to for you as a business, thinking about the latent bias?
How it looked like, kind of, was it initiated by finance? Did you not have that problem at all? Kind of, what's the story that led to it? Because ultimately it's also, and I think this way a lot of people get lost in this whole efficiency conversation is they talk about CAC payback and AR per FTE and all of those fancy things. But at the end of the day, it's at the level that you and I are discussing it right now. It's like, well, how many deals can this one rep run? Yeah. And how can we, you know, while we know how many opportunities they can run, how can we get them to close more of them or for higher ACV and kind of do that operational stuff that is actually driving the financial outcome?
So for us, it was a progression to this point, right? Like it wasn't like one day we turned this on and poof, you know, rolling forecasts and iterations, right? This is a pace we've built over time as we've grown as a business. And the goal then was always to say, hey, how do we create more alignment and how do we remove the silos and how do we have the interactions be cohesive and continual, right?
Yeah.
For us, set it and forget it is over. Right? Like it's gotta be this continual state of how do we iterate forward together? And so when we think about like that latent buyer, right? There's aspects to that, that we go and we say, hey, what is our discovery looking like? Are we asking the same questions that we did 12 months ago? How do we adjust that? And then finance is coming in and saying, hey, we've got this annual budget. It's a North Star. This is what we're going to go hit. But we're looking at trends monthly and that rolling forecast monthly to understand like, how do we maximize what's working and how do we improve and fill where those gaps are. So we still have like, and I think operational cadence is huge in this, right? Because you can't just have a whole bunch of meetings where everybody's just sitting around. Like when you're talking about like removing silos, that doesn't mean you become inefficient in meetings, right? You have to be super efficient there too. So our operational cadence is, you know, we still have the annual budget. That's our North Star. We have our goal to go. We're going to continue to work on that. We're going to meet weekly and look at the iterations and changes. If we're seeing something that's working really well, we're going to lean into it. If we go off track or we're seeing something that's not, that we don't like, then we look at that monthly and then quarterly review everything. Right? Like how did the quarter go? What does a quarter go look like? And then within that, we have the marketing team cadence, the sales team cadence, the operational team cadence that's looking at their individual metrics along that buyer journey and saying, hey, we've got something that's really working, go after that. And so the goal is to create this smooth, ongoing, continual rolling forecasts and operational cadence that gives us the ability to execute quickly with the idea and this mindset that, look, we want to get to our North Star, but that road isn't straight, right? There's always going to be changes and shifts.
You had this example of the marketing team changing something or delivering 300 more leads or something like that. Was this actually a conversation that was brought up in the go-to-market session or in the, I'm not sure what you kind of call it, but in the wider session, basically, that was flagged by them as, I don't know, like a good thing, but also a watch out? Was it basically kind of flagged like this, right? Because that requires just so much awareness on the marketing team side to understand, hey, this is actually a good thing going through, right? More leads is always great, right, Mikkel?
Totally.
But on the flip side, there's also then the awareness, oh, wait a minute. So there's a downstream effect I need to be aware of. I need to have that communication and we maybe need to, you know, move some things around because we're now having the spike, right? Was this how you caught it basically kind of in a session like that?
So we have a dashboard that we're constantly reviewing that'll show how many leads we're getting today, how many ops are being created with those leads, what is the latency of op creation to leads coming in, right? Are we starting to see that speed up or go down? And then what we do this week actually impacts next week and next month, right? Mm-hmm. And so we're always looking at capacity for sales rep performance to leads and how we can shift. So a good example is like, hey, someone's new or they, you know, how do we balance that capacity on the sales side? How do we shift by regions? And our team is super, we have three regions we really work through and our team is super comfortable with like taking leads across regions and things like that.
I think what many people listening, they will have a dashboard that shows something. They will have a meeting once a week where they talk about some of those things. But I think what's the difference here is that you take all of these data points and they actually lead to like clear action on the flip side of that meeting, right? And I think it has to do with a couple of things. And I'm just guessing how things work in your organization. And sure, there's, you know, dashboards and stuff, but it's also marketing is aware and has an understanding of, you know, the limitations and capabilities and capacity and what have you on the sales side, right? There's an understanding of, hey, we're seeing this metric going up, let it be sales cycles to our earlier example. And, oh, wait a minute, this is going up. This will now have this consequence here. Now we kind of need to react to it over there and shifting these things around, right? And I think what is happening in most organizations is they have all of those dashboards. They're looking at, you know, those numbers here and there. Then they may or may not do a QBR. Then they're backward looking. It's like, oh, sales cycle went up. And then, we should totally do something about that. And everyone around the room is like, yeah, we should totally do something about that. And then you check in the next QBR that may or may not happen. And it's like, actually, guys, what did we do about this sales cycle thing? Yeah. And everyone's like, what sales cycle? I don't remember, right?
It's not my responsibility.
And in your case, this is like hyper focused on that stuff, but also coupled with actionability bleeding out of this, basically.
So one of the things, I think that's exactly right. One of the things that we always try to do is turn everything we possibly can into a leading indicator.
Yeah.
Right? And so one of the maybe the best examples we have of that is our ghosting rate. We call it a ghosting rate. A lot of folks call it a stick rate. So, you know, when you sell to SMBs, a lot of these folks are founders. They're super busy. They have the best intentions. They want to get on a demo with you. They book a time for tomorrow morning, but something comes up. They've got a fire to put out and they can't make it, right? And so you end up having this ghost rate. We watch our ghost rate as a leading indicator for how many opportunities we can create next week. Right. So if they're starting to ghost this week higher, how does that look next week? And what does that look like for next month? Mm-hmm. Right. And so what we've done, so a play that we'll run there, and it's kind of one of my funner plays, is like, look, maybe that buyer is less active. Maybe they're shopping or maybe that got busy. Right. And so we actually shifted our SDRs to work exclusively at times on this with special cadences and plays we call the Ghostbuster strategy, where they'll come in. And their whole deal that week is like, how do we bring the ghost back into the funnel? What additional enablement do they need? What additional information? Can we set up like webinars or little like, you know, here's the value that you may be missing with a product like ours? So that's kind of maybe one of the things that I would say is like a really good leading indicator. So if I wake up in the morning and I start to see, you know, our dashboard, I'm like, hey, how many leads are we getting in a day? How many did we turn into opportunities? What is our trend for ghosting? Is our trend for ghosting coming up? Oh, it's summer. People are starting to go on vacation. Okay, the trend's ghosting going up. How do we start to bring that back in? So we create more of a forward-thinking leveling out of opportunity creation. And if we can create that, then we create the consistency of our close rates.
People are throwing this word leading indicators around like crazy all the time, right? Because it sounds cool. And everyone knows like, oh, you know I shouldn't be looking at lagging indicators. I should be looking at leading indicators. But in your case, what you're doing there is the definition of leading indicator is not that it's early in the funnel. The definition is that it can do something about it, right? Kind of that's almost how you're flipping it around. And something cannot be a leading indicator unless you can take action on this, right? Which I think is extremely interesting. It's because that then becomes a process wherever that indicator is going in the wrong direction. It's like, okay, Frank woke up, look at the dashboard, ghosting is in the wrong direction. Boop, triggers like 3-4 things that need to be executed coming out of this, right? And I think this is really how you can use this thing, right? And the other way to think about it is almost a programmatic way to say, okay, something bad happens on this report and this dashboard. What are the three things, what are the three plays we usually execute? And let me think about which one is the most appropriate today. That's almost how things you guys are running this, which I think is extremely impressive.
Yeah, so I appreciate that. And the thing that we talk about all the time is you kind of have to have the plays ready to do this. We always talk about innovate before we need to, right?
Yeah.
Because if we're trying to do this while that's happening, it becomes very difficult. It becomes very difficult to mobilize.
Yes.
But if you know you have a ghosting play ready, if you know you have an op creation play ready, if you know we have maybe there's a regional thing that we're trying to overcome, or we see something hit. You know, that's the other thing we see a lot of. We run plays and we're like, hey, this is working. People are really liking the new module released. Let's go lean into that because this messaging is working better than maybe even the original messaging we thought. And buyers are starting to stick to that. So how do we mobilize and get that to all our sellers globally and be like, hey, if we talk about it like this, it's really resonating with customers and they're super excited about it. That's the kind of stuff that we want to do. But you have to have that ready and you have to have those plays there before you need them.
So the, you know, innovate before you have to. I had this experience. We were behind somewhere and we figured out, oh, let's do this spiff. And then, oh, that worked. And then that became the hammer. And then every time we were behind, it was like, oh, let's just do a spiff. Let's just do a spiff again. And that is at some point, obviously, that, you know, grows stale and stuff. But did you actually have sessions where you and the team sat down and it's like, okay, if this thing goes south, what could we do about this? If this thing kind of turns here, what could we do about this? Or was it more organic, right? Kind of how prepared almost did you approach this?
So we're constantly trying to do two things at once. We're trying to get more visibility into what next month and the month after looks like. Yeah. Right. And so that we're kind of do that in the pipeline creation, but we're also trying to understand like how what we can do today affects those coming months. Yeah. And so we will spiff, like I think everybody spiffs, but I think one of the things that we talk about a lot is I think we all think about like spiffs as potentially a positive for the reps, right? Oh, spiff this new module or spiff this new thing. But what starts to happen is they end up being overwhelmed with all the different things that we're asking them to do. And it's like, oh, I gotta remember to sell this thing a certain way. So what we try to do with this is continually look at what's providing the most value in the sales process, in the buyer journey. Where do we see we can affect that most? Where can we get ahead of what we're trying to do? And then where we know we can get ahead of it, try and be proactive against it versus reactive against it, right? Because I think you said in another podcast, you were talking about like, we always spiff from a defensive position, right? And I think we do that too sometimes, but how do we accelerate through an offensive position?
Yeah. I think this is really interesting, honestly, Frank. I mean, You had like two things in there. Actually, one is the, hey, you need to have the player ready before you actually need it. And secondly, you also have this, hey, we were looking into the future, so we also have a little of time before we actually execute the player, right? And those two things put you basically on the front foot in going about this. And I think this is probably some of the reasons why you're able to run this setup in this way and be so, I'm sure, I don't know the numbers, Frank, but it sounds very efficient what you're doing there. And thanks for sharing, you know, some stories and some experiences and some, you know, ways of thinking about how you actually kind of got there. So thanks a bunch for spending some time with us here, Frank.
Oh, appreciate it, guys. It's been a great conversation. Thanks for having me on.
Nice.
Take care.
Have a good one. Bye-bye, guys.
Bye-bye.